Welcome to the Matt Morgan Coaching Podcast. The fact that you're listening means you're ready to be inspired and empowered to take your life, love, and leadership to the next level.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Today we have my dear friend Mona, as she is going to help us unpack Enneagram Type 3, the Achiever Performer. And so Mona, thanks for being with us.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you for this opportunity to discover the intricacies of my Enneagram.
Yes, you are an amazing friend of Sarah and I, you and your husband, Jeff. I had the honor of officiating your wedding back at the pandemic, the height of the pandemic in 2020. And you and Jeff are both type threes. You guys are integral in our life. We love you guys dearly. You're such a healthy three. And so I thought it'd be really fun for people to be able to hear your story. And as we get going, I want to start with some descriptions of type three. Here it is. It's important for me to come across as a winner. I love walking into a room and knowing I made a great first impression on a crowd. The keys to my happiness are efficiency, productivity, and being acknowledged as one of the best. I don't like it when people slow me down. I know how to airbrush failure so it looks like success. I'd rather lead than follow any day. I am competitive and sometimes to a fault. I can find a way to win over and connect with just about anyone. I'm a world champion multitasker. I keep a close watch with how people are responding to me in the moment. It's hard for me not to take work along with me on vacation. It's hard for me to name or access my emotions, especially the dark and twisty ones. I'm not one to talk about my personal life. Sometimes I feel like I'm an imposter. I love setting and accomplishing measurable goals. I like other people to know about my accomplishments. I like to be seen in the company of successful people. I don't mind cutting corners if it gets the job done more efficiently. And people say, I don't know how or when to stop working. So for those of you who identify as the achiever performer type three, those might be some tendencies that you resonate with. Not all of us. There's a lot of different shades of type three, but that's a starting point. And the way that we find our Enneagram type is by not just our behaviors, but more importantly, our core motivation. And the core motivation of type three is to be successful, or to at least appear to be successful, and to avoid failure at all costs. That's what drives the engine of type three. And Mona, I'm kind of curious for you, as you listen to some of those tendencies, some of those behaviors, and as you hear the core motivation, I mean, how does that resonate with you in your world?
Well, first of all, I have to give you credit for introducing me to Enneagrams, because here I was thinking that I was totally awesome before I realized that I have a lot of things that I need to work on. So I would say that a lot of what you said, such as, you know, sort of the fear of being exposed, right? I think there are many wonderful things about being a three, and we'll talk about that. But there are a lot of limitations and parts that are really difficult to even swallow when I hear you say it, that I've been trying to work on since I've kind of started to think more about this. And being on this podcast is one of them, is being able to kind of talk about some of the things, because it is hard to get deep and personal sometimes and expose parts of yourself to others.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I think that's one of the ways in which we can really know our number is when we start reading about it, it makes us uncomfortable.
Yep.
And we want to stop. Can we please stop with this part? This is really hard. And yet that is so good. It's not meant to create guilt or shame in us, but it really is meant to create awareness and for us to be the best version of ourselves we can be. But let's start with some of the good. Mm-hmm. Like, threes are amazing people too. And what do you love about being a type three?
I think, you know, the interesting thing about me, I've always recognized that my motivations and sort of my goals in life have always been very, very much driven by sort of this internal drive that I didn't know where it came from. It didn't really come from a push from my family. We immigrated to the United States. We can talk about that. But I always knew that was, you know, sort of this inner anxious rat in me who, you know, was always running, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I can recall from being in first or second grade and the night before a test, you know, being anxious about how I was going to perform the next day. And these are very vivid memories that are probably biological that I'm now recognizing are partly a result of why I've been able to achieve certain success in my life, but it's also brought with it certain weight and certain, you know, anxieties and hurts that I think throughout my life now in this, you know, stage of my life, I'm trying to work on. So, yeah, I mean, it definitely resonates and I don't know where it comes from. I just know that it's been very early on. I think when I was younger, it was defined in scholastic achievement. When I scored anything less than an A or, you know, B, I would cry. I would have this very dramatic response. And then, you know, as life went on, it kind of manifested in other things.
Yeah, it's amazing how we learn early on, whether you've immigrated to the United States or you were born in the United States, there is a culture here that says we celebrate the winners mm-hmm. and we really don't talk about the losers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we catch on to that really mm-hmm. quickly. And so we want to be the best. And the most depressed person in the United States is an unsuccessful 3, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And so because so much of us find that we end up finding that we are what we achieve. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we end up becoming a human doing mm-hmm. rather than a human being.
Right.
And we find that our identity is directly tied to those achievements. And so on one area, what it's so great about a 3 is that they are achievers. They are performers. They can get things done. They are fast paced. They're nothing wrong with kicking butt mm-hmm. and going, you know, being a goal oriented person. And you have that. I mean, you went to Princeton, you were Ivy Leaguer. I mean, you have like all this or Yale. Sorry. What Yale? Okay. Yeah. Even better. Like, don't put that over me. But yeah, there is so much of a connection in you that's like, man, I did achieve. I did get through it. You are a practicing physician. You and your husband both are dermatologists and you've had a practice as well. And so there's so much beauty and the confidence that 3s have that they can go and achieve. In fact, if you look at research, most entrepreneurs are either a 3, a 7, or an 8. 3s, 7s, and 8s have the highest amounts of emotional energy on the Enneagram, the inner belief that I got this and I can go after this. Mm-hmm. And I know that's been part of your journey. But yeah, there's something beautiful about that. And I think there's something to celebrate. There's nothing wrong with trying to win. And so a lot of 3s really want to make sure they know how to define the win. What is the measurable? Mm-hmm. And it seems like because measurables work so well, work is oftentimes, or scholastic achievement, you measure A versus B, as you said. That's the pathway by which you measure yourself against other people. How has that, as an adult, impacted you from your 3-ness?
You know, I think it's really interesting because I definitely feel that there's been a transition in my Enneagram tendencies or the way that, you know, sort of the motivations behind how I behave or make decisions in the world, in a sense that, you know, this first kind of half of my life, the first, you know, I would say 2.5 decades were very much focused on coming to the US, integrating as a citizen. And I think a lot of the insecurities that come with that as well, which is that I was, you know, this sort of awkward 11-year-old who went to middle school literally 2 days after we had arrived in the US. And my mom, I'll never forget, she wrote on a little sheet of paper, "Can I please use the restroom?" Because at that time, I didn't speak any English. Mm. And she was worried that if I needed to go to the bathroom, how was I going to communicate that to my teacher? So I practiced that with her many times. And then she said, "Okay, if you freak out and you forget, show them this paper." So very much, you know, during that time, it was sort of like, okay, I don't want to be this kind of like second class citizen who doesn't speak English, who can't connect with the other human beings around me. So my focus at that time was learn English. So I was in English second language class. I placed out of that, I was there about a year, and then I placed out, and then I started taking, you know, regular classes with other middle schoolers, and then went to high school and eventually, you know, graduated. But my whole focus during that time was achieving, and I was going to be successful, damn it, no matter what it took, because there's no way that my parents made the sacrifices that they made and I was going to become a loser. You know, so that became my universe. I chose a university, which I am really proud of to this day, University of Texas at Dallas, which really wasn't, you know, the equivalent at that time. You know, University of Texas at Austin had an undergrad program that had a football team, and it was kind of your prototypical college experience. I didn't do that. I was like, nope, I'm going to stay close to home. I'm going to study, and I'm going to do the best I can because I can't have any distractions. So then I did that. And my goal at that time was to get into Yale Medical, you know, to get into a medical school, but I really wanted to get into a really good medical school. So I got into Yale, and that was amazing. That was this really, you know, sort of momentous achievement that, hey, here I am, like, mom and dad, I did it. I achieved what you came and sacrificed everything for. So all that was going well. You know, proceeding well, according to my quote unquote timeline. And after all that, it was really later in my 20s where, you know, I had what I would consider my big first failure in life. And that was ending up in a marriage, a relationship that ended up not succeeding. And it was that for the first time, my entire world came crashing down on me. And it was everything. It was the image of, you know, success that, hey, up until that day, I had made all these decisions that had made my mom proud and my dad proud and the community proud. And in that process, I sort of lost sight of myself, of what were the things that made me happy. And, you know, there's absolutely, I wish this person all the best, and there was nothing wrong with that person as a whole, but they were not the best fit for me. But it amazed me that despite all this quote unquote success and all this intelligence that I thought I had, in the very basic decision of choosing a partner, I had gone so wrong. I had really gone awry. And that was the first time that I sort of had to press pause and really reflect on who I was, how I was making my decisions, why I was making my decisions, what really mattered. So I would say that was a big thing for me.
What do you see now that, you know, you're removed from this, from your first partner, your first marriage? Why did you marry this person? When you look at your threeness, what did you see in there? Whether it's the shadow side of deceit, or, you know, this imposter syndrome, or we're a chameleon, be all things. Did he have a pedigree that worked?
Absolutely. It was all of the things above. So, you know, it was that this person was from the same cultural background as me, which was kind of interesting because until that point, I really hadn't dated anyone in my culture. But so that was sort of like a check, like, okay, my community will be happy. My parents will be happy. And, you know, he was a successful physician who had gone to, you know, had great educational background and was a surgeon and kind of represented what the community or what I would have kind of pictured for myself on paper. And I thought at that time that that's what it was. That's what I needed to do. Mm. Not very much at all the fact that we were so different. Mm. We had literally no things in common with one another. Again, not to kind of make this about that relationship, but really going back about focusing on the outside and the outer perception of me and what I should be doing and what that image of success looked like versus what does Mona think a successful relationship looks like.
It is so powerful for you to talk about this, because when we create an image to get love, what gets loved is the image and not necessarily the person behind the image.
Yep.
And so here you are, and this is the shadow side. Every number has a shadow side. And the shadow side of the three is deceit. I'm a three as well. And in its most unhealthy form, it can be full-blown lying. But it can also just be creating the image you want other people to see because you're trying to please people. You're wanting other people to see you outside as I look like this. I have it together. And for you, at least in part, I'm pleasing my parents.
Yep.
I'm making them happy. Or this looks good from society because this man checks all the boxes of what looks good for a husband on paper, you said. But internally, what do I want?
Right.
What do I need? And it's so interesting how oftentimes threes don't spend the time really asking, who am I?
Yeah.
And what do I want? And so that was, and it sounds like an amazing opportunity for you to do some self-reflection.
Yeah. And I did a lot of work, and it, you know, it wasn't just kind of going through that experience, but the experience of sort of, you know, the disappointment in, my community or my parents and sort of things not working out, or that image of success that I had so, that I had fought so hard for my whole life at that time, thinking that it came crashing down, which obviously it doesn't, and you move on. But that was a huge learning point for me. And I think, Matt, one of the things that is incredible that I've kind of, even now as we're talking, I'm thinking about is for someone like me and perhaps other threes, this desire, inner desire to be liked or to be seen as a success, you can keep it up for so long and you can pursue it with such zest that you can almost reach a point of emptiness. Like it's almost as if you can fool yourself for so long and others, which is what happened to me, and particularly in that relationship, that I kept going and going and going, and I kept ignoring the signs that this was not healthy for me, this was not good for me, until I literally was left empty. And that crash is what was necessary for me to wake up.
That's so powerful. It flies in the face of what we fear is failure. We fear failure, but the failure was the greatest opportunity for your success today. And it's really interesting, that word success, like how we even define it for ourselves. And I think probably it's really good for us threes to look at that word and define it every year. How do I define success for you? But through that experience of divorce for you and moving forward, how did you redefine success for yourself in your life?
I think that it was realizing that this is not it. So when I experienced that emptiness and that crash that I'm explaining to you, it was sort of the universe telling me, okay, Mona, this is not it. And when I started to know that that wasn't the path that I could go down, then it was really introspection of like, okay, well, why is this not working for me? Oh, it's because there are, you know, discrepancies, huge discrepancies in vision for life and what makes you happy and fulfillment and your vision of a happy, you know, existence with this other partner. And I started to define those for myself. And when I started to kind of really define that for the first time, then I began to manifest that in a partner, right? Okay, well, so I, Mona Sadikpour, need this. I, Mona Sadikpour, find happiness and fulfillment in that. And once you begin to define that and understand that and really internalize not what other people want for you, but what you want for you.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
Then you can actually make better choices. And in this case, thankfully, I've met an amazing human being who ended up being all those things that I so badly had needed.
It's so interesting. I, you know, I'm a three as well. And I know that twos, threes, and fours were in this triad of the feeling heart triad. And twos are hyper aware of other people's feelings. That's their superpower. Fours are very connected to their own personal feelings. And threes oftentimes are a little bit feeling repressed, especially dark and twisty emotions, you know, like fear or anxiety or those kind of things. And each of those three numbers, deep within their bones, often at a subconscious identity level, struggle with one word. It's called shame. And shame says, I'm not enough. And for me, you know, shame was, I am loved based on the image I created. And so therefore only reinforcing that the person behind the image isn't actually enough. And so I struggled with that shame of the fear that I'm not enough. And so the only way that I overcome that is by kicking butt at work to try to quiet that inner voice. I used to have reoccurring dreams that I was like fine wallpaper. I'm like a middle school and I could attract people, but I couldn't keep people. If they punched through the wallpaper, the attractiveness, they would see that there was no studs, there was no insulation, there was no substance. And that was me. I'm hollow. I'm empty to what you're saying. And I'm just kind of curious, like for you, how you have worked through shame, even in a moment of like divorce or those kind of things, like you found your strength clearly. But how did you navigate those waters of shame within yourself?
Therapy. I mean, I think one of the things was at that time, thankfully, I lived away from my community and I lived away from my parents, which I think not thankfully in a way that I don't want to be close to them. But I think it really carved out the time and space for me to define my anchor. My happiness, my unhappiness, you know, we talk about happiness. I think it can be cliche sometimes, but it can be peace. I mean, I was not at peace for a very long time. I dealt with a tremendous amount of shame, that whole event. And to this day, like, it's difficult right now as I'm talking to you about it. You know, what's going in the back of my mind that like, oh my gosh, I'm telling this story and it's going to be recorded and someone's going to listen to it. And someone's going to think, oh my gosh, I didn't know she went through that. And I thought she was really happy and she has this great marriage. I didn't know she went through a divorce. I mean, those are like present thoughts that are in my head.
Yes.
And I, part of me talking to you about it is because I do want to tell that story. I do want other people to know who may experience similar things to me that, you know, these are parts of our stories that define us. And I'm at a place now that I can speak about it. I can't say to you that it's still easy for me to speak about it or that I'm going to like go and advertise it, but I need to face that because part of, you know, my own kind of, I guess, weaknesses or things that I've been trying to overcome is having comfort in discomfort because it's very uncomfortable for me to right now be seen as this woman whose first marriage didn't work out, you know?
Well said. That right there is a struggle that I think most threes deal with, is that in interpersonal relationships, we create the best image we want other people to have of us.
Yeah.
We're successful. We're put together. We have it all together. So to show vulnerability.
It's hard.
It's so hard.
Now it's interesting because it's not always hard for me in intimate setting. If I mean, it takes me a while to kind of trust and get that space where I can talk about it. But in this fashion that you and I are doing it, or in a way that, you know, people go on social media and do other things, that's very hard for me.
Yeah.
That's very, very hard.
Well, you're so brave in doing this because I know that all of us threes listening are like, oh my gosh, me too.
Yeah.
Like we struggle with this and we want, our goal is to become the healthiest version of ourselves. We always are going to be a three. There's nothing wrong with performing and achieving and kicking butt, but it's like, how do I be me? How do I show up authentically with me? And so much of my definition of success today has less to do with performance and work. It has much more to do with my interactions with community, especially ones that I have an arm's distance with, right? You talked about like if there's an intimate setting and I feel like I really am safe, then I can trust and be vulnerable. But if I don't know that I'm fully safe, I won't be vulnerable.
Right.
Because I don't trust that their perception of me is going to be what I want them to be. So it's so interesting. On Tuesday, I could be in an environment with somebody and I can share stories about my life. And there's nothing wrong with sharing success stories and great stories. And then on Thursday, I'm sharing the same stuff, but for two different reasons.
Right.
Right. On Tuesday, I'm secure and I'm sharing the joys of my life and that's all great. But on Thursday, I'm impressed by the person I'm talking to and I want them to be impressed by me. So I'm sharing the same stories, but from a different motive.
Right.
And it's not because I'm free. It's because I'm in bondage to their perception of me.
Yep.
And I'll walk away and they would have no idea.
Right.
But I will. And I'm like, why did I say that? Why am I saying this? You're insecure.
Yeah.
And so much of my success today is predicated on, am I being authentic
right.
in my stories? Why am I sharing what I'm doing?
Right.
And that's been a big journey for me and a continuation. So
Matt, I want to ask you something if you don't mind. So, you know, one thing your audience may say is like, well, you know, and obviously we focus on like one part of the chapter, which is obviously I've moved on past, I'm in a very happy, thankfully, relationship now. It's definitely a part of my story, but people may say, you know what? I'm already in a great relationship. Like, I don't have any issues at work. Everything seems to be stable. Why do I really need to do this? Why do I really need to take the time to figure out my Enneagram or where the darkness in my Enneagram is and how do I strengthen and become a healthier number? And I will say that for me, that answer is because you never know when things can come crashing down. And you never know when universe or your life or your relationships or your work or your job will force you to face these issues, because that's what happened with me. And, you know, we talked about kind of relationship, but, you know, the other part that probably other people can relate to is, you know, failure in work, right? And so what can happen if your career doesn't go as expected? And here I was as an immigrant, very cliche story. I wanted to be a doctor, but not because my parents wanted me to be a doctor, but because I wanted to be a doctor. I became a doctor and I went to about as safe of a career choice as you probably can, right? Like, because what happens to doctors? They're successful, right? They're not going to lose their job. They're not going to, you know, have issues. That's as safe as you can go. And that's what I did. And guess what? During the pandemic, I lost my job. Right? And so, and again, that's like a whole nother conversation. But the reality is, and I think I want to kind of challenge your listeners to think about the fact that these are lifelong skills that if you can take some time to really understand and face your own weaknesses and darknesses or whatever you may call it, dark and twisty as you like to call it, these can become points of resilience in your toolbox that you begin to understand yourself better and how you make decisions so that when there are challenges, you're better equipped to face them.
Yeah, it's so good. Threes are probably the least in touch with their feelings of anyone on the Enneagram. And so when something like this happens, a devastation, an unexpected tragedy, or loss of job, or loss of a relationship, or a loved one happens, you have no idea, you have no skill set of how to process. We know passion and anger and excitement, big demonstrative emotions threes might really get, but yeah, fear, insecurity, all of us are operating in one of two paths, fear or love. And fear is usually the easier path, predicated on years of experience of coping. Coping is about protecting yourself. Mm-hmm. But love is usually the harder path. What does love require of me? And it starts with loving yourself and knowing yourself. And so that when, no matter what happens, no matter what situation occurs, you are able to mourn appropriately, process, am I a failure? You know, one of the biggest things that I've had in failure is, you know, I'll try to look at failure and say, hey, you know what? I've heard great things. And it's true. Failure is an opportunity to begin again more intelligently. But what my devil's advocate side says inside is that's just something losers say to make themselves feel better about themselves, right? Like, I don't know if you've ever had that. And it's like, how do I create this? Like, am I being honest with my failures that I lost? It's like, even losing is an opportunity for an education, though. Even losing is an understanding of knowing yourself more and what you're capable of. And I know you've experienced that, not only the pandemic, but even recently in your life. And if you're willing, I'd love for you to share your journey as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And for many threes, you guys listening, you are entrepreneurs or you want to be an entrepreneur. It is not for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
But share a little bit about your experience through that lens.
I'd love to. So I was... And there was a reason I'm going to tell this part of the story of what brought me to Colorado, but I was recruited to an academic institution in Colorado straight kind of from my training to have a big fancy title of the director of XYZ, which for just privacy, I won't say that to make anyone look bad, but that brought me out and that really fed my three. That was great because here I was going to come and be a director and lead this sort of center for innovation and teach residents and do all this other stuff that was great, both as a career, but also I think for someone who was just starting. And during the pandemic, which was about a little less than 2 years into that opportunity, the pandemic happened and I was notified, even though I was the director, I was notified over a Zoom call over 10 minutes that there was a unanimous decision made by the organization to terminate that, basically close that entire center that I was directing. And I believe the quotes were, "And as its director, we no longer need your services." Hmm. And I was hung up on a Zoom call and that was that. And so I was left without a job. This was supposed to be a week before my husband and I were supposed to get married. We were still at the stay-at-home order. And I suddenly had to figure out what I was going to do. And I decided that I was going to start a new practice. So for 6 months, I worked on opening a new practice. We opened a practice. It was great. We were able to, you know, kind of bring to life this vision that I had for the type of service that I wanted to offer to the community. But then again, life happens, right? And even though you're in control of what you can do, you're not in control of what the world does to you or around you.
Yeah.
And what happened was that for a variety of different reasons that we don't have to get into here, stresses due to being a small business, not being able to recruit help, our partner unexpectedly leaving the practice, personal issues that came up with health and all those things, we decided that we needed to leave and move closer to family. So now, 3 years into this entrepreneurship adventure, as the practice was just starting to, you know, get going and become successful, we had to shut down a business. Mm. And again, talk about another moment in life where I needed to tap into something that was going to allow me to move through that without, you know, getting crushed emotionally. And thankfully, due to the other events that I had in my life, I had built in reserve to be able to kind of look at that event and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is what has to happen. Mm-hmm. But again, there was that three in the back of my head. And it's interesting, as you were talking, when you said there's a part of you that says, oh, success is kind of the beginning of the opportunity to start again. But then at the same time, you have this other voice that says, oh, that's just because you're being a loser and you're just trying to hide it. That's the same three, because the three is an achiever. The three yeah. wants to start over again. But at the same time, you have this other part of you that says, but then how and why did you fail? Yeah. Right? This very judgmental part yeah. that places blame or shame on this event because it was unlike or contrary to what you had expected.
Yeah. You know, we live in a culture where we celebrate the winner. Yeah. And that's why threes love that so much. And we all want to win. But there are more losers than there are winners yeah. out there. And we celebrate the stories of perseverance. We celebrate grit and determination, and for all the right reasons, mm-hmm. to keep going. Don't stop. You know, keep going. Push that boulder yeah. uphill every day. And for so many of us and for so many different numbers, that is the story we need to hear. And yet for threes, sometimes there's another side of the coin. Mm-hmm. And that is to have the courage to quit. Mm-hmm. How do you know when it's best to actually walk away? That is actually better for your overall success.
That is, I couldn't have said that better myself. That is probably one of the most profound things I've heard recently. And I have to say that that is something that we really, really struggled with. And for us, it almost took, you know, crazy measures to extract us from that, because I think the push is the very much so the motivation and the message and the narrative that we tell ourselves and the community and patients and media and all of that tells us to just keep going. But if you just keep going and keep it going a little longer. But what we, and by we, I mean my husband and I, realized is that there was a price to be paid for that. So if we continued, yes, we could have kept going. But what was suffering was our, you know, emotional health, was the fact that we were away from family trying to raise a toddler. Mm-hmm. We were, you know, working until midnight every night because we couldn't get good help to try to recruit staff. People would come, show up, and then, you know, go to lunch and not come back upstairs. I mean, there was tremendous stress. So we had to ask ourselves, what is the price of continuing to go, to continue to keep going?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people told us, but are you sure, like, you could do this or you could do that?
Yep.
And that was really hard to make the decision and say, no, this is the time to walk away.
Yeah. In your context, it took more courage to quit than it did to keep going.
Yeah.
And luckily, you guys were at a place where you are both so emotionally mature that you were able to spend time asking the important questions, not just about work, but about life. You're defining what a meaningful life looks like for you.
Right.
You're defining purpose, passion, legacy, emotional health, needs, family. You're processing all of those layers together, which enabled you to make a really tough decision. But the right decision for you guys in your journey that you're heading on right now. So I couldn't be more proud of you in that journey. And I've been able to be by your side, you and Jeff, through this process. But it's been really neat. And I hope that you guys listening can see that, and I don't say this to most numbers, but for threes, sometimes that's the courage act, is to be able to know when to walk away, because there is, the price is too high.
And I think that, you know, going back again to, you know, people talk about, like, you know, see the accolades. And I think in very much the heart of a three is this idea of, like, this particular thing that I'm doing is going to allow me to achieve X, which then is going to go and allow me to achieve Y, right? So sort of we make these decisions in a way of contributing to this, like, greater CV. And it doesn't have to be like your work CV, but kind of this story that other people tell about you, right? And I mean, that was something that I thought about too. And I talked to my husband and I said, but then what are people going to say? They're going to say, oh, they just quit. They just closed up their practice. And that's not the success, because, you know, we were grateful to have been a really, really successful practice in the community. And that was still, at this day, despite all everything that I've been through, it was still in the back of my head of, like, what are people going to say about us? And what, you know, what is that narrative going to be about why Dr. S and Dr. Lim, you know, why they left? And to kind of put that to the side, to move through that, because it's this wind that's constantly keep pushing back to you and say, don't do it, don't do it. And to kind of move, have the courage to pass through that difficulty, is part of this journey of understanding yourself and being able to build resilience. And I think, again, if there can be another, you know, reason of why it's important to have these conversations, why it's important to study this and take time and have moments of introspection, is that I think one of the most valuable skills in life is resilience.
Yeah.
And going through these things and understanding yourself better will allow you to build that.
Yeah. I love your story, because for so many of us, we're always trying to please and want to get love. For sometimes it's our dad, sometimes it's a professor, or, you know, sometimes it's a coach. For me, people are like, who are you trying to please? Everyone.
Yeah.
In my 20s, that was my answer. Everyone. They didn't even care about me or what was going on. And yet I cared about everyone and their perception. Some people are social media influencers with a lot of people, and they feel more trapped because they have to keep the rat race going, right? To please the audience, even though you're drowning. And so your story is such a powerful thing for us threes as we're going and as we're achieving, nothing wrong with that, but to take inventory of what gets sacrificed if you're frantically racing to just keep on pushing that ball. And are you okay with that? Does the benefit outweigh the cost or not?
Because, you know what, Matt, you may be racing and you may be all in, but you're not in control of your environment, and you're not in control of the next ball or the next mountain or something that's going to roll down the hill and come and stop you. And I think that's the thing, is kind of realizing as a three, rather than having this kind of self-absorbed or maybe, you know, egocentric view of the world that I am in charge and I am going to succeed and I am going to do X, Y, Z to be efficient and to be productive and to be liked. And I'm going to understand that I am just another variable in this greater world, in this greater universe with other people, other forces that are at play that are completely out of my control. So how do I exist in that realm as someone who is healthy?
Yeah.
Right.
So good. And what's so great about threes too, is that when you're able to work on that soul aspect of what success is, you're such the power of a three is you're going to land on your feet. There's going to be another pivot. There's going to be another adventure to have for you. And that's so neat. It's like, guys, you're going to land on your feet. Like, you're going to have another adventure. You're going to have another success. And so what a cool thing. And so I hope those of you listening can learn from Mona's story of how to be a healthy three. And it may you, if you don't have, seek one close friend in your life in whom you can be completely real and completely vulnerable with, so that you realize that you're not alone and it's okay not to be okay.
And you know, Matt, the first time that you talked to me about Enneagrams, I think I told you this the other night too, it was the first time that I started to ask myself, why am I doing the things that I'm doing? And, you know, for example, during fellowship, I told you that I had a really productive year and I published a bunch of papers and I wrote book chapters and I got research grants and I got top awards for my research, this, this, this. And when I started to look into this Enneagram, I was like, but why did I do that? Did that actually bring me joy? Like, yes, that project was really interesting and that I learned, you know, so-and-so from that particular thing, but I was doing it to also please my mentors and to also please, you know, and kind of get an accolade from kind of the dermatology community or whatnot. Was it because I truly was at bringing personal meaning to me and personal fulfillment? And I think maybe for some folks, it may just start with asking a question. When you are asked to do something, hey, can you do this for me? To kind of take a step back and say, okay, before I say yes, because maybe saying yes is going to get me a raise or is going to give me whatever, do I really care about this? Does this make me happy? Because in order to do it, I have to sacrifice other things. I have to sacrifice time with family. I have to maybe not watch my favorite show. So is that price really worth it? Because what I'm going to get out of it is of deep personal meaning to me versus I'm doing it so that I don't say no to someone, so that they don't get mad at me, so they're happy with me. It could just start as simple as that.
I call this a mic drop. It's so important for us to be able to know that. You're so right. Because we just go. Mm-hmm. Just go. We'll go 0 to 60, but we're going the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. And so taking time to be like, what's the roadmap? What direction? Where's the North Star?
Right.
And that's what you're talking about. And so, yes, before we say yes, say where are we going and why are we doing that? So, well, anything else you'd like to share before we end today? This has been so helpful.
No, I just wanted to say that I'm a work in progress. I mean, I appreciate you thinking of me as a healthy three. I think that I am working on being better. And I'm trying to understand myself better. And it's good to be able to just hear those voices in your head and to recognize when you are being your own worst enemy. So I will say, I appreciate your vote of confidence, but I will tell everyone that I am learning with everybody else and I'm definitely a work in progress, but I appreciate you and I appreciate you introducing me to Enneagrams and allowing me and teaching me to be a better person and having me on your podcast to share my story.
Yeah. Thanks for doing it. And you're right. We are all on a journey. This is not a destination. This is not something we arrive at. This is always something we can continually get better at and get more healthy. So, well, thanks again for joining us. And next time, you guys will be on Enneagram Type 4.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Morgan Coaching Podcast. Subscribe below, share it with your friends. And if you want to take your life, love, or leadership to the next level, check us out online at mattmorgan.com.